This is episode number 445 with Elliot Biznow.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Welcome everyone to a special edition of the School of Greatness podcast. I am excited because I've got a good friend, Don. His name is Elliot Biznow, and he's the founder and managing partner of Summit. Now, Summit is the owner of Powder Mountain Resort in Eden, Utah, where the company is headquartered. Summit hosts dozens of gatherings a year, including Summit at Sea, which is where I first experienced this incredible organization. And Elliot is the advisor to the Summit Institute, whose mission is to apply creative solutions to real-world challenges related to the environment, education, the arts, health, and social innovation. And he also served on the United Nations Foundation Global Entrepreneurs Council and co-founded the Get Well Soon Tour. Now, we talk a lot about really how to cultivate and attract the world's biggest leaders and bring them together for a surreal experience. That's right. We talk about the art of creating surreal experiences. And I first met Elliot on a cruise with the world's greatest leaders, celebrities, influencers, and tastemakers. And it blew my mind what he was able to put together in his mid-20s to bring these people together to create an experience that literally transformed the way I thought about business and life and relationships. It still is the greatest event that I've ever been to. And I learned so much about how to create experiences based on what they did a number of years ago. What we cover is why he and his partners bought a mountain in Utah and why they are building a city there. This is unbelievable what they did. Also, the best way to build relationships with highly influential people, why he dropped out of college to pursue his mission, and how to get A-list influencers to speak at your event. Also, the power of letting yourself dream as big as you can dream. Guys, I love this. Elliot's a great storyteller. He's got a great mind. He's so positive. And what he is creating and building is unbelievable. Not many people his age have created and cultivated communities the way that he has done. So without further ado, let me introduce to you the one, the only Elliot Biznow. Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got a great guest on today, Elliot Biznow.
How you doing?
Good to see you, brother. Super excited about this. I met you, I want to say 2010. Was that the first Summit at Sea?
2011.
And I'll always remember, because it was the greatest 3 days of my life, probably. Like, there's only a few like 3 day experiences that I can remember and talk about with such level of enthusiasm, and I still talk about that 3 days as like a catalyst for so many opportunities, connections, and just one of the most like unbelievable experiences. I remember like 3 a.m. there's like a laser show and there's a couple hundred people on the deck. We're in the middle of the ocean, and like Pitbull is performing with DJ Iree and Axwell, and some other stuff was happening. It was just like, what is going on? And it was such a cool experience. So I want to go back to kind of how it all started, Summit Series, and this vision for you and creating these influencer events, because I think I read that you spent $65,000 on credit cards to throw your first kind of influencer events or dinners or events or parties. And how old were you when that started, and why did you want to do these events?
So I'll start in the middle.
Okay.
We have a company, there's about a dozen of us, and our biggest achievement to date is we did a conference right before Summit at Sea, and it was in the nation's capital. And we'd had about 700 people attend. And, you know, it was a nice business conference. We'd achieved good speakers and great people coming, and we actually all huddled together and we said, we want to do something different. We want to do something. We're actually thinking about what to do. I actually met someone, and they asked me a question one day. They were sitting down with me as we, and I was kind of telling them about Summit and the vision. And they said, "Let me ask you a question, Elliot. Do you keep it real?" And I was like, "Me? Of course I keep it real." Mm. And they're like, "Everyone keeps it real. You need to keep it surreal." And so we had this little business. It had been a few years. We had this conference that we'd done in the nation's capital. And we said, "You know what? We're done. We're going to do something radically different." And we chartered a cruise ship. Mm. And it was about $1 million to make the deposit, because it wasn't a hotel. We actually had to put up the money up front. And we literally took all of our collective savings, all of the company's savings. I mean, I don't know how close the bank account was to zero, but we were talking for weeks. We're like, "Look, if nobody comes, we're going cruising."
For $1 million cruise.
We're going cruising. And I think the cost was more actually of the ship, but that was kind of the down payment. Yeah. And we said, "Look, we want to do something different. I mean, there are lots of business conferences. How can we keep it surreal?" So we chartered this ship, and we had this vision. We want to create a content, music, and arts festival.
Mm-hmm. On a cruise ship.
On a cruise ship in the middle of the
ocean.
With
our own private island, right?
That went to, on day two, stopped at this uninhabited island.
I remember this.
Richard Branson was one of the speakers, and the Roots were the house band. Yeah. And there were about 1,200 people from across the globe who came. And, you know, it goes to that mindset. It's okay if maybe 10% of the people don't get it, or it's too far out there, it's over the top, or they're offended. That's okay. As long as 90% of the people are blown away. I think it's why, you know, Burning Man has had so much success. It's like, for all the people who don't like Burning Man, that's okay. There's 80,000 people a year who say, "This is the greatest experience of my life." So that was our moment, was we're going to do Summit at Sea. And
that was a game changer, man. It was life changing for so many people.
It was just no one had ever heard of an event on a ship, and to turn off the connectivity.
There was no Wi-Fi. There was like talked about like, "Hey, you guys have Wi-Fi," but there wasn't any that weekend, which was beautiful because we actually connected with each other.
Yeah, we told everyone. We said, "Yeah, I'm sure there'll be Wi-Fi. Everything's fine." It turned out there would have been if there weren't like 1,000 people trying to get online at once.
The biggest, like, tech nerds in the world. Yeah, yeah.
There was one person that demanded to speak to the captain of the ship.
No way.
I heard that he finally got to the captain. He said, we need to turn the ship around."
Shut up.
So
that's hilarious.
All right, so back up. How did we get to that point, to that ship with those 1,200 people? So I went to the University of Wisconsin. I feel I was very normal, actually definitely below average.
Why Wisconsin?
Well, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I just thought it was so different. I wanted to do something really, really different. And I it looked really fun. I didn't get into any of the 6 schools I applied to. I have a list of all my rejection letters.
Georgetown or...
I applied to like ridiculous schools.
Harvard and Yale.
I didn't go that high, but I just remember they were like... I think I applied to Princeton. And I didn't get into any. So I had 0 acceptances, and I have all my letters. They're actually all ripped up. And they're like... I don't know if a year later I found the ripped up letters, but somehow I saved them. And I went to Wisconsin. I actually played tennis growing up. Uh-huh. And so the main reason I went there was tennis. But it just seemed like a really fun, great place. I loved it. What a cool spot. I didn't even know you could be an entrepreneur when I got to college. It wasn't even a word I'd heard or associated. I had kind of this moment where I saw someone screen printing T-shirts when I was a freshman. And I asked them who they worked for. And they said, "I started my own business." Mm. I said, "I don't understand, but who hired you to start the business?" I kind of went through that whole thing, called my parents, was like, "What does this mean? Who does he work for?" I had this very humbling moment on the tennis team where the year before I went to Wisconsin, I went to visit, and I met like the cool seniors, and then I was there freshman year, and the seniors came back, and now they're in the workforce. Mm. And I remember this one senior is like, "Stay as long as you can at school."
Yeah,
you don't want to go out there to the real world. It's bad out there.
Yeah.
It's really bad. And I got this entrepreneurial drive. I started a little t-shirt company freshman year, and sophomore year I started a little creative marketing company. Mm. And obviously those didn't work. We like poured our heart, sweat, and tears into them for 2 years, one on each business. And I took all my savings. It wasn't very much savings, but I kind of plowed it into those. But I was learning and getting into the groove and figuring things out. And at the beginning of my junior year, I started a business with my dad called BizNow, after our last name. Mm-hmm. And It was basically like a Business Insider or TechCrunch of commercial real estate. So it's kind of the who's who, People Magazine, Business Insider of what's happening in commercial real estate. So what's commercial real estate? That's every building you've ever been in that's not a residence is a commercial building. So your yoga studio's in a commercial building. The restaurants you go to are in commercial buildings. There's this huge industry all over the world of people who build commercial buildings, the developers and the architects and the brokers and the contractors right. and the financiers, and nobody wrote about it. And my dad was a writer, and he started writing about it and just started in Washington, D.C., where we're from. And I said, Dad, maybe I could sell advertising. Mm. So he signed me up, and I got my dream job. My first day ever was July 1st, 2006, commission only, 20% commission on anything I sold, and I got to be the advertising salesperson. And I was like, this is it. Amazing. I couldn't believe it. And I started waking up every day at like 5 in the morning.
Wow.
And I would hit the phones and I would cold call. I became like, you know, the cold calling king. Mm. And I was like, this is it. And I got my first sale on July 20th, 2006. I went into a real estate firm in Washington, D.C. It was a summer break before my junior year of college. And I put 3 packages together for $4,000, $6,000, or $10,000 because I'd heard they'll always pick the middle package.
Yeah, yeah.
And he picked the silver package, $6,000. I got 20%. And I remember leaving the meeting
like,
this is crazy. And by the end of the summer, I'd sold like $40,000 of ads. And by kind of the end of that first semester of junior year, I was approaching $1 million of sales.
Wow.
And I was really just getting the groove of it. And I remember I had this day where I used to get so excited walking to class because there were these thousands of people walking to class, and it was a great energy. It was like walking to a stadium. You know, I would go to the football games, and you feel like you're on this team with all these people. And so I'm walking to class every day, and I just love it and this energy. And one day, I don't know why I had this moment. I just turned around and I like looked at all the faces, the thousand faces like streaming by me, and I started walking the other way. And I'm like, how am I ever gonna be different? If I'm just the same, like if I'm just part of it, like think about how many amazing students there are everywhere. I mean, if I'm going to be a student, I need to be a different type of student. And for me, I said, you know what? I got so much out of school. I really had a great experience. I started my business there. I met some great people. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't think I'm going to achieve my dreams if I keep walking with everyone else where they're going. I'm going the other way. And that was it. I mean, I left.
Did you go to class that day or did you keep walking?
I don't remember, but I remember I called my mom and I was like, you know, Mom, you know, I know I've always said I'm not going to drop out of school. And she's like, are you going to drop out of school? I'm like, no. You know,
I'm going to take a break.
I want to talk about this thing called a leave of absence where you just take a semester, you see how it goes. Anyway, yes, I dropped out of school.
Right.
But it was with a real purpose, you know. People try to sometimes glamorize dropping out of school. It wasn't that at all. I mean, I was Mr. Disciplined, super dedicated, up at 5 a.m. every day.
Wow.
You know, I didn't drink. I was just really focused. And I dropped out for a reason. I said, school is to help you get squared away after high school. You know, when you're living in, up until high school, you're living with your parents.
Right.
So college is to get you, you know, is to help you grow up and it's to help you further your education. And I said, it really helped me grow up. And my education is the school of life. Mm. And my education is I want to be great at business. And I'm getting that right now.
Yeah.
But I want to go 15 hours a day on it. And so that was it. It was a really thoughtful decision. And I left to start this business with my dad and to pursue and continue the business. Just cold calling, selling ads.
Wow.
And I just hit it. It was years. We got an office. So I went back to Washington, D.C. I got an office. It was this garbage office space. But the address, it was a shared office, like where you can, and I had a little interior office. I would sleep in the office a lot of nights, but the address was 1601 Pennsylvania Avenue and the White House is 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
That's pretty cool.
So it was lit and it was actually across the street, but I would tell people like, hi, this is Elliot Bisno. I'm here at our global offices at 1601 Pennsylvania Avenue. Yes, yes, yes. The White House is across the street. You know, I want to talk to you about
right.
One time. We were at the shared office. One of my coworkers, I remember we were sleeping out. One time we got locked out at night. Like, we were sleeping in the office and locked out, you know, in our boxers and t-shirts. One time we thought it would be a good idea to cold call the directory of other companies in the shared office. That was a disaster. One time I had this spreadsheet. I would meticulously keep this spreadsheet of all the companies I was cold calling trying to sell advertising. And they had, like, really kind of ruthless notes, like, you know, Lewis is amazing, definitely a hot prospect, you know? You know, Sarah is this, John is this. And it was, but it was all the notes. I accidentally sent a prospect my spreadsheet instead of the PDF. Thank you. We didn't have, you know, Uber or anything then, so I did an advertising deal with a limo company, and I got free limo rides in exchange for advertising. So I was just like, I was kind of just working like anything I could, selling ads, building the business. Basically, you know, Summit Series, which is what that ship was, kind of spun out of that. So I was, at that point, I'd been out of school for a year and a half, and I'm, you know, about 23 years old, and I didn't know anyone. And I said, you know, in order to build this business, what I really need is I need relationships, I need contacts, I need ideas. I'm kind of like an island. I'm like siloed. I think there's other islands, but I can't find them. And so I was just, I don't know why I was so into cold calling, but I started reading about people in different magazines and newspapers. Mm. Not a lot. Being an entrepreneur 9 years ago, 10 years ago was not a thing. I didn't know anyone in my high school who ever started a business. Well, certainly zero people started businesses in high school. I didn't even know anyone in college who started a business except this one person I met. But this idea, I'm going to cold call people that I'm reading about. I read about Tom's Shoes. They'd only given away 10,000 pairs of shoes. And I literally cold called Blake, the founder of Tom's Shoes. And I read about Vimeo, which had just started in College Humor, and Thrillist. These are all just started. I just cold called the founder and said, hey, I started a business. I know you guys started businesses. Why don't we do this a trip? I called it the Under 30 CEO Summit. That was my best name I could come up with. And I said, I'll actually pay for all your flights out, and I'll pay for the whole thing, because I didn't think they would come otherwise. So when I talked to Ricky Van Veen, one of the co-founders of College Humor and Vimeo, he actually thought it was so crazy what I was doing. He has this ongoing joke with his business partner Josh that when they get someone who calls them who's so insane, what they do is they actually tell the person, they say, this is amazing. You're really onto something. And I can just tell you right now, get your pen out. My best friend and business partner, Josh, would love to speak to you. And so he actually literally did that to me. Of course, at the time I didn't know. And I was like, amazing. Wow. This is awesome. I talked to Josh. I somehow convinced them. They ended up pranking me. On the first trip, the guys from College Humor do all these pranks. They ended up pranking me on the first trip. So we're at this big dinner. I'd like meticulously planned it. I'd never done an event before. And here we are. It's like my big moment. I'm 23. I have these 20 people here. And I go to the restroom. And while I'm at the restroom, they apparently travel with this like beautiful white printed card. And on the card, it says, your attire is not appropriate to the standards of the club, and we ask that you change immediately. And there's like a little like dash.
From management.
It's like management.
I have had that card before.
Okay, yeah,
someone gave it to me before.
So I come back, and I guess they told the whole room.
Yes.
Everyone being on it. They told like the head, you know, maitre d' or waiter. And then I come back, and I sit down, and I'm like holding court. And of course, I'm dressed just fine. And they hand me the card and go, sir, I'm sorry. And, you know, hand me the card and walk away. And I think that's the whole gist of the prank, is that they're not there to answer a question. You just get this card. It's like, you don't know who to talk to. You talk to the other people in the room. They're like, dude, you better go change.
Right.
Like, I can't change. I don't have anything. I don't have any extra clothes. What am I going to do in the middle? So actually, when we did that trip, it was, I forget the total cost. It was like tens of thousands of dollars. And I actually got sponsors to pay for most of it. So I lost a little bit of money, but I had this idea. If I get these people to come, I got a venture capital firm and a real estate brokerage firm each to kick in a little bit of money. That covered most of the first trip. Then we went on to the second trip. And that was 60 people. Everyone from the first trip invited a couple people. And after the second one was 60, the next one was 120, 250,
wow.
750 was DC. And then from there, about 3 years after the first one was Summit at Sea.
Yeah. I remember getting invited, actually, It was either the first DC event or an event before that. I remember getting invited, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm good right now."
It wasn't good enough yet.
Well, I'm sure it was great, but I was just like, it just didn't like appeal to me yet. And the DC event I was actually going to go to, but I had some other commitment already, so I couldn't go. Ryan Holmes and Dan Martell were like, "Dude, they're doing this thing on this cruise ship. You should come." I was like, "All right, cool, I'm in." And it was mind-blowing, man. It was crazy what you guys did.
Yeah, I think just, you know, what started with just getting 20 people and then 60, and, you know, you get some speakers. I remember someone's like, you know, one thing you should really add to the events are content. We're like, content?
What were you doing before that? Just like dinners and hanging out and like...
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any coach or anyone to teach me. I actually, it started because I actually never got invited to an event. I read about other events, but I was like, I don't know how to get invited to that. So this is almost 10 years ago. Like, I didn't even know what an event would be like.
Right.
I didn't finish college, so I wasn't educated enough to know. There were no TED Talks. TED Talks wasn't a video series yet. And so we just tacked it out, and then people would come and they'd give advice. And after a couple of years, we started putting in content, but then we started making the content, you know, deeper, more progressive, more thoughtful. Mm-hmm. We started having really cool panels. Like early on, we had, you know, John Legend, Mark Echo, Michelle Reed, Chancellor of the DC School District, and Wendy Kopp, founder of Teach for America, and we would do an education panel. Mm-hmm. We had early on 7 NASA astronauts came, or Ishmael Bea, who wrote Memoirs of a Boy Soldier, Sean Parker came, we had Mark Cuban came. These were all in the early days. I got Ted Turner to say yes, and then Blake from Tom's interviewed him, and I interviewed Russell Simmons at one of the early ones, and so we were getting like really interesting people.
And how are you getting these people?
You know, it started with just from the 20,
yeah,
and then the 20, someone introduced me to this person, and at a certain level, you can't cold call anymore, so you have to actually get introductions. You know, you actually need people to that who can validate your work, because you can only cold call kind of people who are your peers or maybe a little bit up, or maybe if they are trying to prank their friend in like the college humor example. But otherwise, you need to get introductions. So we just built this great product, and people really love the event, and they knew, hey, when Summit Series does an event, they deliver, they take it seriously. You know, there's incredible execution, and I know the people that come are the real deal. You know, it's people like yourself who are there. And so the speakers say, yeah, I want to be a speaker to an audience of that caliber. And we always said, you can only speak if you attend. We didn't want people kind of parachuting in. So yeah, but it was hard. It was one at a time. And momentum actually at that one right before Summit Series, Bill Clinton actually came.
It's crazy. I remember hearing about that, yeah.
That was the easiest speaker we've ever had. Like most people, they're, you know, they have their advanced teams, they have all this nonsense, and they need a confidence monitor. I'm like, what's a confidence monitor?
Yeah.
I can't afford that. And they're like, that's like two screens that show the things in case they forget. I need all these seats reserved, and I need this type of water. And it's literally this crazy, you know, list of demands like you'd expect from a professional DJ. Well, I was prepared for when President Clinton spoke for, you know, get the teams ready, whatever he needs. And I remember talking to assistant, okay, saying, all right, what? Tell me about President Clinton. What does he need? And they're like, well, he just needs to come through the back because he's the, you know, former president with Secret Service. But as long as he comes through the back and there's a nice route, all he needs is a microphone and a glass of water. And I'm like, right. But like, what else? Like, you know, what kind of stool does he want? What does he want the room layout? What does he want the lighting? What about how much time? He's like, yeah, you just get to the front. When you want him to stop, you do like that. And then he'll wrap up in 5. I'm like, but okay, does the water, does he need ice? And does he care about the cupcake? Yeah, just a mic and a glass of water and just call him out. He's really excited.
That's
I'm like, wow. And that was one of the best speakers have ever had. And
amazing.
It was just an interesting thing because sometimes you have these speakers and they're like, they're not high profile at all. And they're just, who are they? How are they even speaking? They're a list of demands. And we had someone who was traveling once, like stopping at us on an international trip and asked us to hold their wine they'd bought. And I'm like, what? This is crazy.
Now, how did you land President Clinton? What was that like? Did you have to pay a huge fee? Was it more of like a relationship thing? Or
okay, so what happened was that about a year and a half before that, we did an event with President Clinton to raise money for the Clinton Foundation. Mm. And so we got connected to President Clinton, and we got a chance to set up an event, which is pretty wild. Again, I was like 23 years old at the time and got connected to them because they'd heard about our earlier event. Someone connected us, and he was just interested in connecting with this, with the Facebook, Twitter, YouTube generation, right? I mean, that's all new at the time, 8 years ago. And he was really interested in connecting with them. And so we had this opportunity to curate people to meet President Clinton. And so we actually had a chance to pick the host venue. So we said, look, if we're going to host President Clinton, we want to decide where it's going to be hosted, and we want to set up the whole thing. So we actually decided, you know, we really want Russell Simmons to host. And so we reached out to Russell Simmons. He was super interested in hosting. And then we wanted Tom Colicchio from Top Chef. And so my co-founder, Jeff, actually went to Central Park and literally at like a multi-thousand person cook-off, just like screamed Tom's name, Tom, you know, till he like came to the fence.
Wow.
And he was like, do you want to cook for President Clinton at Russell Simmons' home? And he's like, yes. And so he made this amazing meal, and we had all these incredible folks. And we brought about 75 people to meet, you know, President Clinton and hear remarks from him. And then like a year and a half later, as we were doing this DC event, we reached back out, and the time worked for him to speak. And, you know, it's just each event has truly built momentum off the last event. So from that, we actually had the people. And then going back to that earlier story, all right, we don't just want to now do a 1,500 person event or get better speakers. Let's keep it surreal.
Always got to change it up, right?
Yeah, the path up isn't always more revenue or bigger names. It's not always the perceived path. The path, in our case, the path up and forward was just a radically different conference. Like, how are we going to stand out in the business conference world? I mean, come on, there's already so many business conferences. But on a ship in the middle of the ocean, Summit at Sea, its own brand, like that, and that changed everything. Like, I don't think we appreciated it at the time, but like giving it its own brand, Summit at Sea, and like there's something just crazy about it. Really, people going on a music festival and art cruise ship, insane.
It was insane, man.
Insane.
It was amazing. So the dinner you did with Clinton, or the gathering you did, you essentially raised money from the 75 people. You donated that to the
foundation.
Then he came back to speak because of that.
Yeah.
Essentially,
and we also made another donation there.
Got it.
Yeah.
It's amazing, man. Who's been the most interesting person you've had come through over the last 8-10 years as a speaker or performer? Or because you've met a lot of interesting people. You've met presidents of other countries. You've had the biggest celebrities. You've interviewed Kobe Bryant to music stars to legends to everyone.
We always have, I'll give a bunch of like really funny examples. So one time we're doing an event and someone's like, the president of Georgia wants to come. I'm like, University of Georgia, state of Georgia, country of Georgia, like the country of Georgia. I'm like, interesting.
I think I was there this Tahoe, right?
Yeah, they're like, he actually was going to go to Davos, but he heard about this summit thing. He likes the energy and he's a young guy. And we're like, yeah, that sounds amazing. We didn't understand like what it meant to have a president of a country. And he literally showed up with like a straight up, you know, armed security force.
I remember, yeah.
It's like dozens of people with like machine guns. And like, I guess we thought there'd be some security and hold the fort down. It's like, no, there's literally like people with insane weaponry.
Right.
And then, who's been amazing? So I went last year. I interviewed Kobe Bryant. He had there's just this gravitas that he brings. You can just feel it. It sounds like when you interviewed Tony Robbins. There's just certain people. They bring this energy and this presence that you can't just create in a moment. You create it in a lifetime of hard work. Of like, you know, I imagine if you met with like a cultural icon, like you can just feel the weight of the room. Like we had Harry Belafonte in a conversation with John Legend a year and a half ago, and you can just feel the weight. You know, civil rights icon Harry Belafonte. You can just feel it in the room. Like we had Herbie Hancock this year, and he actually went through and was listening. He had pre-picked his favorite songs. We're in like a 1,500 person theater, and he'd pre-pick songs, and you would listen to the music in your seat with Herbie, like Herbie. You know, while he's like nodding, listening, and then you're hearing him describe the music that he'd written, and there's just this gravitas. So with Kobe, we go to China. He's if not the biggest, one of the couple biggest celebrities in China. Someone said, you know, be ready for 50,000 people could show up. And, you know, what struck me about him was that his answers to his questions were answers I hadn't even fathomed could be real. So I'll give two quick examples. Number one, I always thought that pressure and success under pressure is about embracing pressure. Like, you realize there's pressure. Everyone feels pressure. Embrace it. The great people know how to deal with that, and pressure creates diamonds. I asked him how he dealt with pressure, and he just said, pressure's not real. Pressure's your ego. I haven't dealt with it since I can remember. And so it was just, it changed my entire reality. And the other was, I asked him about, you know, how do you deal with hard times? And I just always thought, including for me, that the best people just got through the hard times. Keep your head up. You know, stay positive. Get through it, because you know what? All storms run out of rain. Get through it. And I think that's a very valid point of view. But his point of view was just, it never even occurred to me, which was, if you want to be great and you really want to learn, when you're in the hard times, I know they're hard. You have to be fully present and embrace those hardest moments. What led you to get to that really hard moment? You know, now that you're here, maybe you don't ever want to be back in that hard moment. Like, what put you there? And to actually, like, be present. And I mean, when I'm in hard moments, I'm just trying to get out of them. And I'm like, I'm coming out of the reasons. This is my fault. And I got to get through it. Yeah. And I'll get done. And just embrace it. Feel it. Why did this thing get screwed up? Why did you get to a really unhealthy place with your diet? Why did you get to a bad place with your relationship? Just feel it and let all the weight of that hard moment sink in and embrace it. Mm. And he was just like, growth only comes from embracing hard moments. So sometimes you get these people and you're just like, wow, they really have, and you can tell it's not just like a quote, it's like this deep, deep knowledge that they've that they've built on for, you know, a decade or more.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, well, an awareness, and that's cool that he goes through that during those hard times. Now I'm curious, you went from, you know, 20-person dinners to bigger events to doing something surreal, like someone at sea, to building that up. And then all of a sudden you decide you want to buy a mountain and build a city on top of a mountain. Now, why, how did this come about? Why? And why in Utah?
Yeah. So about 6 years ago, a little bit less, I had a crazy meeting, and I met with someone who'd been to Summit events before. His name is Greg Morrow, and we just met up for a coffee. It was actually right here outside of Los Angeles. We met up for a coffee, just like, you know, the idea, never eat alone, like meet with interesting people, get to know people. And I went for a coffee, and he told me, he's just like, I get Summit. I get the community. You know, all events and communities have a brand. Like, you're building something really special with School of Greatness, and you have your own unique ethos, value system, culture, and what you're building is unique to you. And what Summit's building is unique to Summit. And what Coachella built is unique to Coachella. And what Burning Man built is unique to Burning Man. And what TED built is unique to TED. And everything is about owning and embracing your unique ethos and value system. And that's what we had done with Summit. Like, we had this, you know, it was, you know, you could say almost like, you know, the Woodstock meets, you know, business conference meets, you know, Burning Man style event. And so I'm meeting with Greg, and he really understands Summit. He says, you know what we really need to do? He goes, we have an opportunity. We could build Place. Like, there's actually really good precedent for building Place. And I guess I'd kind of thought about it, but this idea, we started mind melding. And this idea, like, think about where we live and walk and go and all the towns we've been to. Like, why do they exist? Why does Brooklyn exist, or Park City, or, you know, the west side of LA, or the east side of LA, or the hills, or downtown, you know, all these different places, these different energies and ethos and vibe and values. And why do they exist, and who built them? And either it's like a group of people just kind of moved to a neighborhood and it started to happen, you know, like you could, and or is maybe an individual or group that set out to build something. And so we started mind melding in this idea of building a place. And he said, you know, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been is called Powder Mountain in Utah. It's less than an hour from Salt Lake City Airport. It's an 80-minute flight from LA or San Francisco. There's a dozen flights a day, literally on the hour. It's the West Coast hub of Delta, and this place is stunning. And Powder Mountain's this 10,000-acre mountain range. This is in 2011. He's telling me it's basically the bottom of the recession. He's like, it's for sale. Like, it's, you know, a private equity firm bought it. They need to sell it. And, you know, he's like, I've been thinking about, you know, wanting to buy it. And he's like, you know, it just occurred to me, it could be with you guys. It's like, you know, my entire background is, you know, it's venture capital, it's private equity, it's finance. He goes, you guys have built this community that is spectacular. Wow. We could partner and build a place.
Crazy.
Crazy. And I and what's crazier is I said, okay, let's go.
During the coffee meeting? You didn't have a conversation with your co-founders or anything? You just said.
Well, I said, okay. We talked for 8 hours. So wow. I could. So our one meeting turned into 8 hours.
So you asked every question possible.
We went all over town. The meeting went to like 6 locations. And then I did, of course, I talked to my co-founder. I said, hey, guys, I had this crazy meeting. But I think we should buy a mountain.
Yeah.
I think we should buy a mountain. I mean, I really do. And what's crazy is that the other three of them, they were like, yes, we should. So what's even crazier is we flew there the next day. Like, we didn't delay. We didn't. Mm-hmm. We literally got on a plane and we just flew the next day and we met him there. And he picked us up at the airport on that trip. And
winter
we,
or summer? What was it? Snowing or?
No, it was that was summer. It was mid-July.
Yeah.
Of mid-July of 2011, and we get there, and he just picks us up in the car. We don't have any contacts. We don't know how we're going to buy a mountain. We have no background buying a mountain. We didn't know anyone at the mountain, but we just drove, and we drove to the mountain. Like, if I was like, oh, yeah. Let's like look at, you know, real estate
this
properties,
house.
And we
yeah,
just
yeah.
drove up, and there's like, you know, some chains down, like, you know, up, and we just like walk past, and we just started scouting, and we saw the view, and we're like, this is really interesting. This is like, it was crazy.
And you were 20, what?
26. Wow. So we get there, and we literally just from that moment on, I think we stayed overnight at his house, and we just went into mind meld mode of like, how can we buy it? And so the thing is, it's
how much was it? The offer, I guess.
Yeah. Price. So, all in, we ended up buying it for about $40 million. But, wow. But here's the thing. So it's really easy to end a deal, end a relationship, kill a deal, like end an interview. Like our interview, if you want to end the interview, you're just like, Elliot, the interview's over. And you take the headset off and you walk out. Or I'm like, the interview's over. I'm leaving. That's it. It's that.
Yeah.
Anything can be ended in like under 30 seconds. It doesn't matter. I mean, literally, you know, almost anything. You want to end a friendship? It's like, hey, look, it's been great being friends with you after 20 years, but I've decided I'm going a different way.
Uh-huh.
So it's easy to kill a deal, kill a relationship, end anything. The hardest part is like dreamscaping it and ideating it. And we just went into this like ideation mode where I think everyone in the room understood, like, guys, this is crazy. If it doesn't work, we're just like, hey, we tried our best for a couple months, didn't work. So we just went into full dream mode. You know, I imagine, again, it's like starting a band. You want to start a band. If the band isn't successful, you just dismantle it after 6 months. That's the easiest part. The hardest part is just going for it. So we just went into this dreaming mode, and we just went for it. Like, we're in his little house in Eden, Utah, and we start going out there all the time. This is over a period of a couple months, and he's coming to visit us, and just all night. Like, my three co-founders and I, you know, all night, we're just literally 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., we're ideating, coming up. And meanwhile, we're like, well, you know, we're trying to meet people. Going back to cold calling, we're like, all right, who knows the best land planners? Who knows the best this? Who knows the best architects? And we're starting, who knows the best lawyers? So one funny story is one of my co-founders, Brett Levy, after college, he went and he worked, believe it or not, he worked in land sales. Like, that was the only job, I guess, he could get after college, right? It's like we all have stories. You're saying you're... Yeah, we all have these stories. Like, he worked in land sales, commission only, in Virginia, like Northern Virginia. He was a land salesman. And he was just, I think he left after like 9 months. He was like, this is insane. Like, why would I ever want to do that? What a, like, crazy. So he hadn't thought about it in like 6 or 8 years. And so we're like, how are we going to figure out how to buy 10,000 acres of land? And he was like, actually, I used to be in land sales. Like, I could call my old boss.
Wow.
So he calls his old boss who came on and advised us. And we just started, you know, in the same way as that original summit and cold calling people, we started putting together the pieces, you know, albeit at a bigger scale. And we came with a financing strategy. How are we going to buy this mountain? Mm. We came up with a plan. Like, here's the amount of money that we need. Here's how we can raise the money. Here's how we can, develop a town. We had this idea. We want to build the most progressive, beautiful designed town imaginable. What Tesla did to cars, we want to do to a town. We want to build this beautiful, just inspiring place for people from all over the world to be able to come.
And how is it now?
Amazing. So it's been
it's been a few years.
It's been almost 6 years. Yeah. So
you got roads, you got houses, you got like a downtown, you got like a Soho, you got like everything in there, right?
It's not that far. So we own a Powder Mountain Ski Resort in Utah. Yep. It's 10,000 acres, the largest skiable mountain in North America.
Wow.
We've put in 3 new chairlifts. There's 4 restaurants. During the season, there's 300 incredible people that work on the mountain. And then we've partnered with the county. We've built about 5.5 miles of roads, water, sewer, power, about 500,000-gallon water tank. We have approaching 150 families that own home sites. We have 8 homes that are under construction. And then hopefully we'll be breaking ground on a few dozen homes this summer. We have LOIs with hotels. And, we're, literally moving month after month, nonstop, building
a city,
a town, a boutique town,
yeah, yes.
A small town.
Yes.
At Powder Mountain.
How many homes will be on there in the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years, probably a couple hundred. A
couple hundred homes.
Yeah.
On the top of the mountain?
Yeah. So the mountain, when you get to the top, it actually cascades. There's these cascading plateaus, and it lowers about 400 feet in elevation. And so you're in this like secluded valley at the top of the mountain. So you have these incredible, incredible 4-state views because you're in northern Utah. So when you look to the north, you look to Idaho, and to the east to Wyoming. And when you look west, you're looking to Nevada because you're kind of in this, northeastern Utah. So, yeah, stunning views, stunning land. And you're ski and ski out. And we've built 25 miles of mountain biking and hiking trails. We have this outdoor land art museum we're building. We have this vision to build the largest land art museum in the world. So it's just about we have this expression we use called facts on the ground. So a fact is every time you do something that's a fact. So we're just trying every day or every week or every few days, put a fact on the ground. So putting a piece of art or putting a new ticketing system on the mountain or changing a logo or putting new signage or getting a cabin started. Like everything's a fact. And eventually when you have dozens of facts and then hundreds of facts, it starts to become something. And that's been something we've applied that term facts on the ground to everything. It's like one day you had 0 podcasts and then one day you had 5 and then 10 and then 100 and then the rest is history. Like, but everyone started. One day, Tony Robbins had never done a seminar before, and it just started with one. So whether it's like a town or a podcast or Tony Robbins, like it all starts with, and I love that term, facts on the ground, because it's just like you start by doing.
Gosh, man. So what's your vision for it now?
The vision is to build the most progressive, beautifully designed town in the world and build a boutique center of thought leadership, a place around entrepreneurship, a place around family values. And we've done a bunch of unique things. So we capped the size of the homes you can build. So you can't build a home bigger than 45 visible square feet. And the average homes are closer to 2,000 square feet. So there's no mega mansions there, right? Almost the entire project is actually an urban walking town. So we have 10,000 acres of land. You actually don't want to put stuff over 10,000 acres. You basically want to make almost all of the land, effectively beautiful, conserved, landscape and let it be natural. And then you want everyone to be kind of in this clustered kind of Soho in the mountains. So this idea, build this place where you can retreat to, you can meet inspiring people, eat healthy food, and you can replace we can be a place that speaks to a new generation and ethos and mindset of people.
Amazing, man. Amazing. So you're creating another surreal experience.
Surreal.
Now, how do you've gone from one thing to the next over the last almost decade, it sounds like. Is there a time where the mountain will no longer be surreal and you'll have to one-up it and have like a whole state that you buy or something, I don't know, or country that you buy? Like, is there ever like a limit, or have you, you know, what's the next step? Have we not gone that
far?
Yeah,
I don't think we're just really focused on this one thing. So, like, I think the vision. So the thing about real estate, the vision to build a town is such a long project. So one of the things when you plan real estate is you plan for 7 generations. And so here's the interesting thing about real estate. Like, the best companies, the best in history, last for like 30 years or 50 years. Occasionally, you hear about a company that's like 100 years old. But that's basically never, right? Like, the best companies of our time that we see are going to be like 30 years or 40 years. So towns last for and cities last for hundreds of years. Like, New York City is just getting started, right? And it's how many years old, you know, 400 years old, you know? Like, you know, these towns and places last hundreds of years, but the challenge is they take decades to get going.
A long time,
so yeah. You can't just throw up a splash page and have a beta product in 45 days and you're humming in 6 months with, you know, a couple hundred grand of seed money. Like, it's a big upfront cost and it takes, you know, a decade to have something amazing. But once it's there, it's generational. Like, when people buy homes.
Talk about legacy. This has been around for a long time.
Yeah, when people buy homes, they have them for their kids and their kids' kids. And, you know, that's the biggest purchase people make in their lives.
And who are some of the people that have homes or land plots there that you're allowed to talk about or that are public?
Yeah, so the big vision is, again, we're building a public town. We want to reinvent what an amazing town could be. And people who've been coming to Summit events, people who are part of the Summit community, have bought home sites and are part of the community. So we've had anyone from Blake from Tom Shoes to Tim Ferriss to Richard Branson and his family. So we have over 100 families. It started with all home sites. So now we're actually starting to develop homes, but it started with all home sites. And then these folks will build, you know, really boutique, beautiful cabins or homes. Like, the average home is, you know, 2,000 square feet. And a lot of these folks are building 1,200 or 1,500 square feet or 2,500 square feet. So
amazing. That's so cool, man. And do you have a home up there yourself?
Yeah, I have a little cabin that's almost ready that I'm hoping to move into at the beginning of the summer. It's 1,500 square feet.
Wow.
And just being in nature, being in a place that can preserve nature, being in the wild, there's just something about you show up and you just breathe the air and you're like, I feel creative, I feel alive, I feel amazing.
Yeah. Tell me about, I think it's inspiring, it's amazing what you guys are doing. And so congratulations on that. And I remember when you guys announced, I was like, how are they going to pull this off? And you're doing it, so it's incredible. I'm curious about building relationships. You've had, you know, a decade of experience building relationships with the highest level of individuals. And what is it about connecting with people that most people fail in doing? Because a lot of people are reaching out with influencers or people to come speak or be on their advisory board or invest or whatever it is. What's the formula for making it work for you where most people fail at building relationships? And what's the best way to network moving forward?
Well, my favorite piece of advice I ever got was listen. And so unless I'm being interviewed, I try to actually ask questions probably 3/4 of the time. Mm. So I'm generally just not talking very much, and I'm generally trying to ask questions. I'm trying to listen. And I would say it goes the same thing in building relationships, listening to people's, not just their needs, but also just like listening means understanding them. Like, who are these individuals? Like, understand at a high level, understand if someone's in a really busy phase of their career or is in a family phase of their career or is in a wanting to meet a certain genre because maybe they want to invest in something. Yeah. And if you listen and you get to know people, you can have the right approach with interacting with them. You know, it's like hands off and give them space. You know, it's, hey, let me help you with this. It's knowing when to email and when to hold back. But it's all about being super respectful. I remember someone told me like this great quote about Michael Jordan, which was like, basically, you're either friend or fan. Like, and as soon as MJ realizes you're a fan, you're done. You're cut out. It's over forever. Like, if there's any inkling you're a fan, you're out. And, you know, I think you just have to make that decision. Are you going to be friends with people? And like, a friend means you genuinely care about them. That means if you're a friend with someone, you're not trying to monetize them. You know, you're their friend. If you're a friend with someone, you're not trying to, you know, build your social profile by even forget posting on social, even name dropping them and name checking them around town. Like, if you're a friend, you protect at all costs. If you're a friend, they inherently know you would do anything for them, to take care of them, to look out for them. And when people say anything about them, you're there to defend them. So I think that, like, value of the word friend, like, I love to think about friend or fan, because, like, that real definition and value of friend, if people know you're that person and you actually want to get to know them, it's very different than when you're like, all right, like, guess what? All these successful people, they know that everyone wants something from them because they have so much to give. And when they get any inkling that, like, so-and-so's hanging around because they're waiting for that ask, they're waiting for that, going to make a sale or get their company, they're going to get that company in the door. That's, of course, they're more successful than we are, so they probably have a better intuition than we have, right?
Right,
so
right.
I think so, yeah.
Mm. And how do you manage and keep all the high-level relationships you have? Because you have so many people, thousands of people in the Summit community now. How do you stay on top of it and stay in touch with people and make sure you're not trying to – make sure they don't have that feeling like you're trying to get something from them, but you're just being a friend? What's your process for that?
I think the best way to stay in touch with people is your product speaks for your engagement. So I often think of Apple. Like, I don't need someone from Apple to, like, call me and check in on how I'm doing as a customer, because the product speaks for itself. And I think of, like, often the things that I have and use. And, the place that I go, maybe it's a great restaurant, I don't necessarily need, you know, a check-in or maitre d' or waiter to ask, because it's just such a good experience. And I think for us, like, I'm always trying to maintain relationships, but everyone has their product. So your product is how you go about your day and business and life. It's your social profile. It's what you actually put out as a business, and making sure, like, everything you're doing holistically, you know, 360 degrees reflects you and your values, so that, because people are hearing your name a lot more than you're able to touch base with everyone, making sure everyone's always hearing your name in a really great context. So I'm obviously trying to reach out to people, trying to stay in touch, you know, keeping lists of the people I really care about, making sure I send them a text, an email, try to meet up, be in their cities. But I think for the most part, making sure that, like, my values and who I am is reflecting that. Because if word gets out, you know, Elliot lost his way, Elliot lost his values, the Summit product has, you know, isn't at an A+. It's, you know, oh, that thing fell off. That's going to affect you way more than, like, checking in, because you should check in and be like, yeah, good to talk to you again, man.
Right.
And secretly, like, have heard, you know, three bad things about you.
Right, right. Got it. I like it. What's something that's missing in your life?
More wild nature. Like, I really have fallen in love the last couple of years with wild nature. And I have that a lot in at Powder Mountain and in Utah. But I just love nature and wildness. Like, I was coming here and, you know, looking at the Hollywood Hills. And I wonder if anyone's ever said this to you in your entire life. But I felt sad that those hills used to be filled with mountain lions. And used to be just wild, and, like, what this place used to be, you know? And I think there's something innate in each of us that is wild, right? And you can get it surfing in the ocean. You can get it being outside. But just, I think what I'm missing is I want to connect. Like, one of my goals for years, I want to connect more to wild nature. So that's
cool. Yeah. That's cool, man. Well, we got to play Ultimate Frisbee a few weeks ago, and it always feels good just to be in the grass, man, for me. You know, being in a city, it's like you're never in grass. And whenever I get to play in grass, even just run in it or just put my feet in, it's like, wow. You forget sometimes what it's like. So it must be beautiful when you're just out in your cabin every day and you look out and you're in the mountains. You can do whatever you want up there. So that's amazing, man. What is it you want people to know about you?
I love playing pranks.
Okay.
And I love being silly, and I love being super exuberant and doing really crazy things. Like, I'm always like if I meet a random person, I'll buy them, and they tell me their dream, I'll try to, like, fulfill their dream. So like I'll meet someone, they haven't gone on a vacation in 15 years, and I'll like send them on a vacation, or I'll like get from like stuff like that to like getting someone a book that I know they want, or like I'm always trying to like glean little tidbits, or if someone needs like a spark of magic in their life, I'll orchestrate like a 1 month like crazy prank on them.
Wow. This is like some game, like from the game, the movie. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
No,
I seen the game?
No, I haven't seen it.
Where a guy like needs more adventure in his life, so he pays an extraordinary amount of money to this company. It's like, okay, for the next month, your life is going to be changed. And he goes on like this wild like chase where he's getting like shot at, and there's like all these actors involved, and it's like a huge prank at the end of the day. But
wow,
puts him at this like whole other level of experience in life.
Well, life is so serious. Life is so serious. There's no way about that. Like I'm super, you know, on the ground, aware of everything that's happening. Like there's no way in the day and age we live in to not be disturbed and frustrated every day, all day, if you let yourself be that, right? So in no way does anything I'm doing trivialize the reality of what's happening every day. But I think you have a choice to go through your life being super positive and exuberant and bring the best out, or getting sucked in. And it's just really hard to get sucked in unless I'm listening to, you know, to Lewis all day. You know, it's hard, you know. The media just, you know, the Facebook feed, it just pulls you in.
That's cool.
That's been really fun, and for me, and inspire the people around me, bring the people around me together. And
I like it's just that. Did you get inspired by Buried Life in any way?
Those guys are amazing. Yeah. I definitely.
I met them at Someone at Sea, and I've become friends with them. And but they did that on the show where they would like try to make someone's dream come true. And
yeah, it's amazing how easy it is to do in your day to day life. Like taking what they do was more elaborate than anything I could ever hope for. But it's pulling those little things, you know, into your life, and into the real world we're in is really powerful.
Yeah. With everything that you know, all the people you've met, all the stories you've heard, all the adventures you've been on, you've been to how many countries now? How many have you been to? Like 70, 100 countries, something like that.
A lot.
All the experiences you've had with the smartest people in the world, the most entertaining people, the most athletic people, the top of people in the world. What's the biggest lesson you'd want to share?
Adventures only happen to the adventurous. And I apply that quote to all aspects of your life, not just like, you know, a trip adventure. This is like my life mantra. It's all adventures because everything's an adventure. Like if I hadn't come to LA to be here with you, like this is an adventure, like coming up here and, you know, coming to the studio and meeting, you know, meeting your team and spending, you know, time with you. Like who knows where this can now manifest itself out and what could come from this. And so unless you're willing to, like, if you don't go on the adventures, you hit a cap. But when you go on an adventure, what's on the other side isn't just a little bit better or even two times better. It could be exponentially better. Because when you go on an adventure, that's like, I just got married this past summer. Like, that's how you get, like, fall in love. And then that's exponential. Like, you can't quantify the adventures because the adventures lead to new best friends. They lead to new ideas. So it's like, there is that element of like, it's not just 2x. When you open yourself up and you go on the adventures, all these things happen. I got to Powder Mountain. You know, I made the cold calls. I turned around instead of going to class. You know, I did Summit at Sea instead of a regular conference. You know, all those things. The adventures only happen to the adventurous.
That's a good one. I like that. What's a question you wish everyone would tell you or more people would tell or ask you? Sorry, the question you wish more people would ask you.
I don't know.
Is there anything you wish people would ask you more about or that you wish you could share more of?
I guess just living your best and truest self. Being your most authentic self, best self. And opening yourself to those adventures. I think living exuberantly and positive, that's kind of me, but not everyone has to be that. But the adventure part, like everyone can go on adventures and can open themselves up to the possibilities in their life and their work and their weekends.
Right. At any moment. Yeah. At any moment.
I guess ask me about adventures.
Okay. Okay. What's the craziest adventure you've been on then?
Besides the last 10 years.
Or if you had one moment in the last 10 years, it's like when people ask, who's your favorite guest you've had on for me, it's like they're all amazing. So I understand, because you've had probably a lot of crazy adventures. But is there one that stands out?
Yes, there is. There is one. So about 2 years into the founding of Summit, I had these three co-founders, mm-hmm. and we read the 4-Hour Workweek, and it changed our entire life. We didn't know that you could do that. And I mean, we'd gone on like family trips, but I'd never really left the country. And we just said, hey, we're going to go to Costa Rica. Like, we're going to go work from the road. We're going to go for a couple weeks. We're planning one of those events before Summit at Sea. And we went for a couple weeks. We just rented a house. It was super affordable. And we were doing all of our work. We were surfing in the mornings. And we were there for a couple weeks. But we kept hearing, you got to go to Nicaragua. Got to go to Nicaragua. So we rented a car. And we just drove across the border. And we drove from Costa Rica to Nicaragua. And you got this little surf town, San Juan del Sur. And we posted up there for like a month and a half. And, I mean, we'd never been outside the country for that long. Ever. I mean, like 10 days is the longest I'd ever been on a family trip. And it was like a couple of months outside the country. And I would say that was like one of the big defining points in my life, that it broke that barrier. Like, we were so close. Like, I didn't have to read the 4-Hour Workweek. After I read it, I could have said, we're not going to go anywhere. I could have gone to Costa Rica and then come back. But to just go there and then rent the car and then kind of continue that journey, and to know I got back, everything was still around where I got back. It was transformative. You know, it was really, really transformative. I'm a really big believer in travel, in conscious, aware, immersive travel to change your life. And it doesn't have to be out of the country. It can be getting in a car and driving up the PCH. It can be driving, you know, from where I live at Powder Mountain in Utah. I can be in southern Utah and Zion in 4 hours, or Glacier National Park in 10 hours, or you can go to the Salmon River in Idaho in 5 hours. Like, you know, every weekend is an opportunity. You know, I'm like the person where it's like Friday at 5 p.m. and I'm like, all right, guys, we don't have anything till Saturday night. Like, we have 36 hours.
Right. Let's go to Joshua Tree. Let's go here.
I mean, anything. Like, how do I get to Catalina? How do I, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I mean, whatever, you know. So I think for me, it wasn't always like that. Mm. And that kind of opened those possibilities. It's like, I remember starting that trip and I'm like, I can't be gone for this long. What if I just see a doctor? You know, it's like, there'll be a doctor
somewhere. Yeah.
You know, and when we went on our honeymoon, we were thinking, what should we do for our honeymoon? We just went to Africa for a month. And we went to South Africa for 2 weeks and Kenya for 2 weeks. And we went deep. We went, you know, we rented a car. We went all the way. And it's like, you know, I live in America. I don't live in Africa. I want to explore new places. I want to meet people.
Yeah.
People everywhere are amazing.
Yeah.
And when you go on these adventures, you make friends, you make connections, you get ideas.
I love it. That's great. Okay, final couple questions. This is called the Three Truths. And you might have already answered one of them, but Three Truths is, if this is the last day for you many, many years from now, and everything you've created is erased for whatever reason, it's gone. Everything you put out there, content, books, the city, it's all just gone for whatever reason. And you have a piece of paper and a pen. You get to write down your final three truths, or the lessons that you would share with the world, and that's all that the world would have to remember you by, at least three truths. What would be yours?
Well, when I was 12, my tennis coach for my birthday gave me a book, Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And in the book was inscribed, "For he who believes all things are possible." And I mean, I couldn't, that's like my first motivational quote I ever got. So that would be quote one. My second would be the word listen. And my third would be, you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time around.
Those are great, man. Great reminders, great lessons. I like that. Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Elliot, for your incredible ability to dream. You've dreamed so big for the last decade, and it's impacted millions of people's lives because of your ability to dream and your ability to connect and your audaciousness to go out there and do the things that you can think of and figure out how to put the pieces together and inspire a movement along the way. And I think it's really cool, everything that you've created. And I'm really appreciative that it's all happening to a good human. And your heart is well-intended. And every time I'm around you, it's always like positivity. You bring positive energy to the world. I've never seen you get like angry at anyone. You know, no matter if we're playing Ultimate Frisbee or you're like interviewing President Clinton or whatever's happening. I remember going up on the mountain with you when they were like breaking the roads and you were like just so excited about the possibilities. So that childlike passion, that dream, and that execution that you have is something to be acknowledged. So I acknowledge you for all that, my man.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Where can we connect with you, Summit Series, learn more about everything that you're up to? If someone wants to attend Summit Series, how can they get involved or, you know, all that?
Yeah, everything is at summit.co, SUMMIT.CO.
Awesome. And they can get a ticket for the next event, which is going to be like a town you're building in Los Angeles or something, and all this other stuff's happening,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the next event is in November of this year in downtown Los Angeles. We love the possibilities of downtown. You can. Mm-hmm. We thought we could actually do something more surreal than Summit at Sea because of the just the amount of venues and options there, the amount of theaters and spaces and warehouses and fields and
amazing.
Yeah,
that's cool. So summit.co, go check it out. I'm telling you, it's going to be a life changing experience if you guys go and learn more there. Now, the final question is: what's your definition of greatness?
Achieving your purpose and your dreams. But it's very specifically not about making money, and it's not about how big something is. And if your purpose and dreams are at any scale, as long as that's your true purpose. I also believe in inherent good and inherent evils. And I think, you know, ensuring that your greatness is on the good side. And that you're really doing something good in the world.
Elliot, thanks so much.
Thank you.
There you have it, guys. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to share it with your friends. LewisHowes.com/445. Tweet it out. Post it on Facebook. Share it on Instagram. Tag me at Lewis Howes on Instagram story when you're listening to it. And let me know what you're thinking. And I'll reply to you over there as well. Guys, people need to hear this one. This is a powerful one. So make sure to give Elliot some love by sharing it out. Again, if you're on your podcast app, you can just click on the share button on iTunes or on SoundCloud or Stitcher and tweet it out, post it on Facebook. Or the direct link is lewishowes.com/445. And let me know what you thought. I want to hear your thoughts about this. And let me know the biggest takeaway you got as well. That's right. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. It doesn't matter how young, how old you are, how little experience you have, or how much experience you have. If you can dream big and you bring passion and energy to every decision that you make, you are going to attract people into your sphere. You're going to attract people into your movement, into your being, and you're going to be able to use that to create something magical, something surreal, like Elliot talks about. And the more surreal experiences you can create for others, the more people are going to be attracted to you and your message and whatever it is you're looking to create, to sell, to deliver to the world. It doesn't matter. But what you've got to have, and what I love about Elliot, is he's got this mind of possibilities. It doesn't matter if it seems crazy to buy a mountain. He did it anyways. It doesn't matter if it feels crazy to create a new city, of a city that he dreams of, what could be the ultimate city to live in. He's doing that. It doesn't matter how crazy your dream is. The key is to dream as big as you can and then go do it. Attract the people, the resources, the tools you need to take action. This is only one life, guys. Only one time right now. Don't waste the next year or 5 years or 10 years when you think you're going to be ready. You're never, ever going to be ready to do something outrageous. The time is now. Step into it, lean into it, and take massive action with a positive mind and attract what you need to make it happen. I love you guys so very much. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.